The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Hey folks, Bob here with this week's Bubble Genius Showcase Item of the Week. If the Twitter toddler in the White House has you completely stressed out, head on over to BubbleGenius.com and pick up their exclusive Republican voodoo doll featuring the face and body of our cartoon dictator. This item is only available for a limited time, so get yours now, only $25 at BubbleGenius.com, with a third of the proceeds going to support the campaigns of resistance candidates across the country. Plus, if you use our promo code BOBC at checkout, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now let the cartoons begin.
Honk, honk goes the truck.
Broadcasting from resistance headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up. Never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Hey, folks, conspiracy theorist and radio show host Alex Jones here to tell you about a brand new diet plan that I've been using, and you should too. It's not a product of the Illuminati, the New World Order, Raytheon, Bechtel, IBM, the Bilderbergs, or the shape-shifting lizard people from outer space. It's a fine product from the folks at Super Vitality Mail, and it works. Say hello to Super Vitality Males, punch yourself in the scrotum diet plan. And here's how it works. For a low monthly subscription fee of $12,000 a month, Super Vitality Male will send you weekly techniques for bashing the living hell out of your balls. Now you might be thinking, ow, that's gotta hurt. Almost as much as when Obama uses tiny airplanes and helicopters to move the tornadoes all around. Sure, it might hurt for a few minutes, but after that, your testes develop a resistance to the punching, and they actually begin to manufacture vast quantities of what Super Vitality Male scientists call skinny juice. That'll both increase your vitality and shed those unwanted pounds. Allow me to demonstrate using my sidekick, Dan Bidondi.
I'm InfoWars groom Dan Bidondi, and now I'll punch myself in the scrotum to prove that punch yourself in the scrotum really works. Ow! 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 Yikes! Ow! Ow! I think I have to go to the hospital. I feel skinny already in all of those dings. And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was a damn witch.
That's right, Dan. You look dynamite. Now go eat your applesauce.
Can I take the cork off the fork?
No, sir. Yes, punch yourself in the scrotum really works. Check out my before and after photos. See that? Sure, you can't actually see the before and after pictures because this is radio. But trust me, I got the documents right here. I'm down to my high school wrestling weight in 60 days, thanks to Super Vitality Male's Punch Yourself in the Scrotum system. Go to InfoWars.com/scrotum and use the promo code I'm a sucker. Order today.
Bob Seska.
Bob Seska. You really are sick.
The Bob Seska Show.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, Rachel. It is Tuesday, August 1, 2017, and this is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com. I am Bob, and we're brought to you by the best soap in the world. It's Bubble Genius. Also by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. Remember that name. If you want free legal advice, head over to thebowenlawgroup.com/Bob Anchez, or just click the link in the podcast page. That's the easiest way to do it. Oh, look, right over there, it's Jody Hamilton. She's here today. Jody.
Hi, Bob Seska. Hello, Bob.
Hello. How are you today?
I am having, obviously, technical issues today, so.
Yeah, well, your voice sounds fine. Everything sounds okay. Yeah,
okay,
I don't think there's any problems. If there are, we can always just blow up the show and go home.
Okay, yeah, you know.
Forget about
I understand that one.
Yeah, I mean, any sort of extra effort, never mind. We just we just walk away. So, yeah. Jody, it seems like years since the last time you were on the show.
Every day seems like it's been a year just dealing with the news.
I think, John Oliver was talking about that, where there's some sort of glitch in the space-time continuum where 6 months feels like it's 10 years.
I know. I the gray hairs that I'm covering with the red hair dye, it's harder and harder.
Right, right. Well, here's the latest thing, and no one's really talking about this. And I want to get this out of the way in talking about this before we talk about Scaramucci, before we talk about this Washington Post bombshell, before we talk about all the things that are going on in the news today. But this is actually going to be a pretty big deal because This involves the Trump-Russia story, and it involves the sanctions bill that the Senate finally passed last week and delivered to the president's desk, which we have confirmation of on the 28th of July. The sanctions bill has been delivered to the White House. And at that point in time, Trump has 10 days to sign the bill. Now, if you remember, at the time, the White House reported, Jody, that Trump was, in fact, going to sign the bill.
But after 10 days, it's a pocket veto, isn't it?
Exactly right. Exactly right. So here's the thing. I think they're going to do a pocket veto. I think Donald Trump's going to stick this in a drawer, and then in 10 days it automatically becomes law, and then suddenly you see Kellyanne Conway all over Fox News Channel saying, it was an alternative signing. We decided to pass it. This is my Kellyanne Conway voice, by the way. It's an alternative. We decided to pass
it. It's not a good imitation.
I'm not even trying. It's a terrible imitation, but suffice to say, this is my Kellyanne Conway voice. Thank you very much. And she's going to say that it's an alternative way to sign the bill. They're going to say that, well, this is another way for the president to authorize legislation. So, yeah, but he will have not signed it at that point. And technically, according to the Constitution, it's a pocket veto. Now, some may be saying, well, isn't Congress going into recess? And then if it goes into recess, that means that the pocket veto went into effect. However, the law, it does not become law. They have to reintroduce the sanctions when they're back in session. However, and this is the key to all of this, the Democrats are going to make sure that Congress does not go into recess officially.
Right, because they don't want Sessions to get fired.
Exactly. They don't want a recess appointment of a replacement for Attorney General to happen during the time that they're off. So they're going to keep Congress in session. So that means the 10-day clock started ticking on July 28th, which was Friday. We're now 5 days in.
Yeah.
5 days from right now, the Russia sanctions officially become law without Donald Trump's signature. And then, of course, obviously the subtext in all of this is he doesn't want to sign the bill because he doesn't want his name on this bill that punishes Russia, since he has promised Russia all this time that he would actually take away sanctions and help Russia. And then, of course, the reason for those promises is because he's been compromised and they have, things like, well, we don't know for sure, but things like the pee-pee tape.
Pee-pee tape.
That will certainly get out. But watch for this, because in the next several days, if Trump hasn't signed the bill, then after 10 days from the point at which it was delivered to the White House, it automatically becomes law. I checked the White House website. They have the sanctions bill listed as pending legislation in their legislative vertical at whitehouse.gov. So they do know, they are aware, and then actually if you go to, check the Senate website, it does say that the bill was delivered to the president, and that was dated July 28th. So this is really interesting. Throughout the time that sanctions bill was being debated and passed in Congress, they were signaling that they were going to sign it. Well, I should bridge that. Initially, they were saying, well, we don't know. We're going to have to see what's in it. We're going to have to see what's involved. That's what Sarah Huckabee Sanders was saying. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And so and then when it got down to the passing of the bill, she said that, oh, yeah. I mean, we saw a bunch of news stories coming out last Friday that said White House signals Trump will sign sanctions bill. But the whole time I'm going, there's no way he's going to do that because he's beholden to Putin. There's no way he's going to sign sanctions. He was put into the presidency. He was installed as president partly in order to reduce sanctions. The whole debate over the Magnitsky Act and Don Jr.
You mean it's not Majinsky, Bob? I thought it was Majinsky.
Yeah, that's right. Jay Sekulow was saying Majinsky. Sean Spicer was saying Majinsky. It might as well. There may be another thing called the Majinsky Act, but I don't know if it really exists. They may think it exists, but it doesn't exist. Also, and this just in, I was tweeting about, by the way, I want to just clear this up. Yesterday, I was tweeting about this sanctions theory that I have with this bill and the pocket veto. Today, We just learned through Scott Dworkin, who's a who's the founder of the Dem Alliance. He reports today that multiple White House and Hill sources are saying Trump does not plan on ever signing the Russia sanctions bill. So the plan is to stall and delay.
Wow.
And it says hashtag sign sanctions bill, which seems to be trending right now.
Wow.
So we're on to something. I mean, who knows? I mean, he could turn around and have a whole signing ceremony and do the whole show and tell thing with the folder and the text in the Oval Office tomorrow with Pence standing behind him. Or he could just pocket veto this thing. So it'll be very, very interesting to see how this all works out. And of course, this leads us into the conversation about this bombshell news story. And there are so many. There are so many bombshell news stories happening right now. There's the
I'm getting whiplash from just turning my head.
Yeah, I mean, there's Scaramucci. That's a big problem, and that's something we want to cover today. There's this God, I'm having you know what? I'm literally having trouble keeping track of all of it in my head. Oh yeah, yeah. The other one is there's this lawsuit.
Oh, yeah, the Fox News thing, yeah.
Yeah, about the Seth Rich story. But the main one we want to talk about is this Washington Post bombshell in which we find out that Trump allegedly dictated Don Jr.'s initial statement about the Veselnitskaya Majinsky Act meeting. Magnitsky. See, now you got me saying it wrong.
See, now I got. See, I did it. It's so easy to do.
Certainly, I have accidentally mispronounced lots of Russian names. Too many Russian names to keep track of.
We can just call them Igor.
Yeah, that's
Vlad.
Right. Vlad. Just make up names. Make up short one-syllable
Sergei,
names.
Sergey. You know, there's a bunch.
Right. We'd just be like George W. Bush and come up with silly nicknames for all of them. We'll just call Veselnitskaya. We'll call Veselnitskaya Stretch.
I like
and,
that.
Yeah. And Magnitsky will become Stretch 2. That's it. I don't know. Anyway.
Stretch Armstrong Jr.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, you remember George W. Bush had the nickname Stretch for like 12 guys in the White House press room. And I think Stretch 1 was David Gregory, and there was a Stretch 2 whose name I don't remember. Nevertheless. So Trump apparently dictated Jr.'s initial statement about the Magnitsky Act meeting, the Veselnitskaya meeting, in New York that also involved Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort and a cast of thousands. I think the Rockettes were there.
They might have been.
I'm not sure, but they may have been delivered over to Fifth Avenue from Broadway in order to participate in this meeting. But nevertheless, so I wanted to review the actual statement itself. This was the original statement that Don Jr. released. And remember, Trump was flying back from the G20. When this all went down. So the story goes that Trump literally dictated the text of this statement while on Air Force One flying home from the G20. And the text went like this. The statement went like this. It was a short introductory meeting. I asked Jared and Paul to stop by. We primarily discussed a program about the adoption of Russian children that was active and popular with American families years ago and was since ended by the Russian government. But it was not a campaign issue at the time, and there was no follow-up. I was asked to attend the meeting by an acquaintance, but was not told the name of the person I would be meeting with beforehand. And of course, that's entirely horse right there. That's from top to bottom. It turned out to be a complete lie, which they then had to revise the next day. And then they had to revise it again the day after that when Donald Trump Jr. stupidly released the entire email chain on Twitter like an idiot.
Yeah, that was the strangest thing to me.
So the story goes, Jody, that this all went down on this flight home from the G20. Here's the Washington Post lead. On the sidelines of the group of G20 summit in Germany last month, President Trump's advisors discussed how to respond to a new revelation that Trump's oldest son had met with a Russian lawyer during the 2016 campaign, a disclosure the advisors knew carried political and potentially legal peril. The strategy, the advisors agreed, should be for Donald Trump Jr. to release a statement to get ahead of the story. They wanted to be truthful so their account couldn't be repudiated later if the full details emerged. Well, in that regard, good job. Because, of course, it was repudiated like seconds later.
Right.
And the story goes on. But within hours, at the president's direction, the plan changed. Flying home from Germany on July 8th aboard Air Force One, Trump personally dictated, and again, this is the Washington Post, personally dictated a statement in which Trump Jr. said that he and the Russian lawyer had, quote, primarily discussed a program about adoption of Russian children. And now adoption has become, you know, this code word for collusion. It's basically right. Every time it's like the Appalachian Trail. Like, you mention the Appalachian Trail, and that means you're cheating on your wife. If you mention adoption, that means you're colluding with the Russians. When they met in June 2016, according to multiple people with knowledge of deliberations, the statement issued to the New York Times as it prepared an article emphasized that the subject of the meeting was, quote, not a campaign issue at the time. The claims were later shown to be misleading. Of course they were, right?
Misleading.
Yeah, misleading. Right? Lies. Another way to say lies.
Yes, exactly. The nice way to say lies.
Yeah. Over the next 3 days, multiple accounts of the meeting were provided to the news media as public pressure mounted, with Trump Jr. ultimately acknowledging that he had accepted the meeting after receiving an email promising damaging information about Hillary Clinton as part of a Russian government effort to help his father's campaign.
Wow.
Wow. Wow is exactly right. This is so bad on so many levels, because what we have here, obviously, and which we can assume that the Mueller investigation is looking into quite thoroughly, is Trump, direct evidence of Trump participating in the cover up of all of this. Now, they say that his motive for engaging in the cover-up, well, you know what, his motive doesn't really matter, but they're saying that the motive in engaging in this cover-up, Jody, is that Trump was worried about the politics of this, not his own legal jeopardy in the entire Trump-Russia investigation, which to me is more disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the president doesn't want to go to jail, you think?
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting about that statement that he supposedly dictated,
Yeah. It's
not word salad-y enough. Somebody edited that for him.
Yes, exactly. There's not enough believe me's and this I can tell you's.
And fantastic and fabulous.
Very, very tremendous.
Exactly. There's none of that. So that's what's so interesting about it. If he dictated it, somebody helped that out to make it sound like a human and not him.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been something. It would have been a lot of that. The meeting was very, very tremendous. This I can tell you. There was big, beautiful chocolate cake. We had the best bagels. They were the most amazing bagels. Of course, I had two scoops of ice cream on my bagels. So I'm really, you know what, I should tell you, Jody, I'm really into the whispery, morose Trump voice these days, which Anthony Atamanik on The President Show does so well.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So funny. And especially this past episode, which I finally watched Friday night. It's just staggeringly.
With Cantone?
Yes. Staggeringly good. Especially the fact that they picked up on how Scaramucci was imitating Trump's gestures as if he is like in love with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Now that brings us to the Scaramucci story, of course.
Scaramucci.
Yes, which I'm so glad that he was fired because
just for Queen alone, just for a good song.
Yes, so we can rescue Bohemian Rhapsody from being ruined mm-hmm. by his name sounding similar to. I guess that word in the middle part of Bohemian Rhapsody is a made up word. I don't know if mm-hmm. it's a made up word. I don't know the history of the song.
I don't remember.
It sounds like Freddie Mercury was just making up words to fit into the thing. But I don't know. Anyway, so I'm glad that song will no longer be ruined. Our long national nightmare lasting for 11 days is over. But
thank you, Jesus.
This is all part of John Kelly coming into the chief of staff position. And busting heads, I guess, turning everything into a more disciplined White House, which is hilarious to hear that.
That'll last about 48 hours.
At best. I mean, if it lasts 48 seconds, that'll be kind of a record. I mean, you know, what we've been looking at for 2 years now, basically, is that Donald Trump cannot be contained.
That's very true.
Donald Trump will never be presidential. Donald Trump will never, ever become disciplined with his tweets or anything else. There is no one who will control Donald Trump, including John Kelly. You know, it's hilarious to see all of the pundit saying, well, finally, maybe this time, maybe this time he'll find discipline. Maybe this time he'll become presidential. And he never, ever does. You know, you go back to, you go all the way back to when he became the presumptive nominee. Everyone's talking about, well, now that he's the presumptive nominee, that means he's going to pivot to becoming more presidential. And then when he finally won the nomination, he's going to pivot now. And during the general election campaign, he's going to be more presidential. That didn't happen either. Or when he did his first joint session address, oh, he's going to become presidential. He bombed something. Uh-huh. And they couldn't wait to declare that Donald Trump had become president as of the inconsequential bombing of a Syrian airbase.
Right.
And on and on and on. And now with John Kelly coming into the White House, it's more of that, which is just, again, Lucy, the old...
That Lucy in the football.
Yeah, holding the football and then pulling it away at the last minute and doing that every single time. So...
Yeah, Kelly is, I guess, willing to ruin his own reputation for this gig.
Yeah, although I think his reputation is still fairly strong, but he's just not... If he thinks that he's going to come out of this okay, this is insane to actually believe that, because he's not. At some point, Trump is going to turn on him. Trump is going to rebel against whatever John Kelly has to say. Trump is, of course, going to... turn other White House staffers against John Kelly. This is the usual thing that we've been seeing with one White House staffer after another. Some of them stay, a lot of them go as a result of this kind of behavior.
But, and wasn't the mooch escorted out, and so was Priebus? Weren't they both escorted out of the White House?
Were they really?
I read Scaramucci was, and I think we said on Stephanie's show this morning that maybe Priebus was also escorted out of the building. Like, is he stealing stuff? Does he have some extra staples?
Yeah,
what is wrong?
They're walking out with more Post-it notes and printer cartridges and shit like that. You know, it's
extra Sharpies.
I mean, the thing, though, that I read this morning, and which still hasn't been confirmed, is whether or not Scaramucci is actually leaving the White House full stop. Like, I heard that maybe he was going to be shifted to another position because Trump likes him so much, but we don't know for sure. So it could be entirely possible that Scaramucci isn't leaving the White House, that he's just going to go down to the steam pipe trunk distribution venue down there where they keep Kellyanne Conway.
Well, he doesn't want to pay taxes on that thing he's selling, right? The thing he's selling to the hedge fund that he's selling to the Chinese government, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, SkyBridge,
yeah.
Well, he's still that's pending.
Yeah,
and I don't know if he wants to go full slash and burn, because I was thinking that that maybe Scaramucci would have been in the loop long enough and has a big enough mouth to go running down to the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue and start blabbing to members of Congress or even the Mueller investigation about what he knows. But at the same time, he does have that SkyBridge thing pending, and the government needs to approve that. So if he does turn against Trump, Trump could use that as leverage to get him to shut the hell up.
Do you think Priebus is going to talk?
Well, it's entirely possible for any of these guys to talk, depending on how close they are to the investigation and how much jeopardy they're personally in. It's very possible that could happen. So now what they're doing is speaking of Kellyanne Conway, now they're talking about Kellyanne Conway possibly being elevated to to communications director to take over for Scaramucci.
She's holding on, isn't she?
She really, really is. And there is, and I, of course, have nothing to back this up with. I have this hunch that a lot of the leaks, especially the leaks that come from senior officials, they're either coming from Jared Kushner's office, or they're coming from Kellyanne Conway.
Tom Hartman thinks it's coming from Mike Pence.
You think? Yeah, you know what? That's another really good possibility, because, of course, it's within Pence's best interest to undermine the Trump administration.
Yep.
Because he, of course, wants the big chair.
All we know is it's coming from inside the House.
It's definitely coming from inside the House. And there were two senior officials that actually confirmed this Trump Jr. story to, I believe it was ABC News. I believe ABC News has confirmation from two additional sources inside the White House. So not only does the Washington Post have confirmation from officials who are close to the president, but now ABC News has its own corroboration from maybe even the same officials or different officials, but they did get independent confirmation of the Trump Jr. Trump story.
That has to be people on the plane.
Yeah, I mean, who's on the plane at the time? Who was on that trip to the G20?
The mooch would have gotten on top of this one.
Yeah, the mooch would have been totally on this. This is all a result. And it's so funny that this has come out the day after they swear in John Kelly as chief of staff. All that discipline. But the leaks,
yeah.
The leaks keep coming. The leaks keep coming, which is so, so amazingly gratifying. So this is another interesting wrinkle in the whole dynamic between John Kelly and the White House, is that apparently, according to CNN, Kelly called James Comey to express anger over the firing, according to White House sources. New White House Chief of Staff John Kelly was so upset with how President Donald Trump handled the firing of FBI Director James Comey that Kelly called Comey afterward and said he was considering resigning, according to two sources familiar with the conversation between Kelly and Comey. You know, I'm wondering if this was a case where, and I'm talking specifically about John Kelly accepting the job as chief of staff. I wonder if this is a case where Kelly's thinking, you know what, I could go in there and I could, you know, whip this White House into shape. I can go in there and fix everything that's going on because someone's got to do it. And maybe that's his motivation for accepting, because it seems to me as if there's got to be some sort of outs, because I don't think John Kelly has any interest in helping Trump.
Yeah, I mean, for him to say he was almost going to resign and then takes chief of staff, that's even closer than being, you know, Homeland Security.
Yeah.
You know, it's that much closer. You know, he's next door, basically, the next room over. So it's an odd way for him to, you know, I don't, maybe he thinks he can help control the guy, but the guy is non-controllable. You cannot control this human being.
No, absolutely not. But then again, maybe John Kelly also has a significant amount of ambition, because, you know, the chief of staff job is one of the most desirable jobs in all of government, because basically you become an appointed co-president.
Yeah, with somebody that you want to be co-president with.
Yeah, well, someone who can be controlled, someone who can be manipulated, which is Donald Trump.
Well, I don't. He can be manipulated as long as it's on Fox and Friends.
Well, I don't think you can control his behavior, his tweeting or his rally blurts and crap like that, all of his self-incrimination and so on. But I think you can control how he's thinking about particular issues. Like, what we've been hearing all along is that the last person to talk to Donald Trump is the one who influences most whatever Donald Trump says next in public.
Right.
So if you go in and you say, hey, I think you should ban transgender people from serving in the military, Donald Trump will just go right to Twitter and go, yeah, I think people should be banned if they're transgender. Can't have those in the military. And then that's how policy gets made inside the Trump White House, which is just effing terrifying.
It is very terrifying. And I mean, did you hear Lindsey Graham saying today that Trump might, you know, start a war with North Korea?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Lindsey Graham, for giving me nightmares. I appreciate that. It is not fun.
F you.
Yeah, thank you, Lindsey.
You're even closer to a bomb than I am, because you're up north and a little west.
I know. San Francisco, the whole Bay Area, is probably on that target list.
Oh, definitely.
You know, the whole idea of war in Korea, on the Korean Peninsula. If Trump is actually contemplating this, and one of his motives for contemplating this, obviously, is the fact that he's so politically and legally embattled.
Right.
A war is, of course, the bomb that, of course, will assuage any problems that Trump has. That's what he's thinking.
Right.
Because remember the last time he bombed something? That's the night he became president. So
why do we have to destroy things to be looked at as presidential?
That's just it. I don't know. I don't know how that works. It's very easy to do that. And also remember, too, that Trump abdicated all of the decision-making about military action to the military itself, to the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that's been going on militarily has had very little involvement from Trump himself, other than to say, oh, you can just do whatever you want. You have carte blanche, Pentagon. Do whatever you need to do. And right. So that's how it's all operating. So, you know, and we go back to his tweets last week, and you know, I'm actually blanking on what he was tweeting about. The thing, it was the transgender thing, of course.
Right.
He wrote the first part of the three-part tweet, right, Jody?
Right.
And the first part didn't have any information about what he was planning to do. It was just, I have authorized the U.S. government to dot, 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 dot.
I know, everybody's scrambling. Is he going to start a war?
Yes. And in 9 minutes, nine minutes went by before he clarified that it was about transgender troops in the military. And the Joint Chiefs actually believed that he was getting ready to launch an attack on North Korea through Twitter. This is completely and utterly terrifying.
Yeah.
That this is something that has obviously been discussed and is in the works among not only the National Security Council, but also the Joint Chiefs and inside the Situation Room and so on, that they're actually talking about doing this, which is going to be a disaster, because if you strike North Korea, they retaliate against civilian populations in Seoul. It's right on the other side of the demilitarized.
Or Tokyo, for that matter. Or Seoul, Tokyo, everything's right there.
Or Tokyo, yeah. They're saying, though, that the first retaliatory strike from North Korea would be against Seoul. I mean, and then, you know, there's also the potential of hundreds of thousands of North Korean soldiers storming into the demilitarized zone. And then suddenly, you know, and I go back to this, and I hate to say it, and I hope I'm just, as always, I hope I'm terribly wrong about all of this stuff. But at some point, you know, with Trump as president, unless he's removed, we're going to see a mushroom cloud at some point. There's going to be some sort of nuclear bomb going off, whether it's a test or whether it's something having to do with what Trump wants to do in North Korea. It all depends on how intense the scrutiny of Trump's participation in Trump Russia actually becomes. I think these things are all linked. Yeah. The closer we get to Donald Trump and evidence showing that Donald Trump was directly involved in the conspiracy to hijack last year's election, and a conspiracy that, quite frankly, continues now and will get worse and worse and worse, the closer that gets to Trump, the more likely it is that there will be a war in North Korea to distract from all of this, all of it.
Thanks for letting me sleep at night, Bob.
I'm so sorry. It's like one of those things that... one of the things that I really want to bring up right before we talk about one of our fine, fine sponsors. I'm talking, of course, of the Amazon link at bobseska.com. It's the best way to support this podcast. You can go shopping for whatever the hell you want, and we get a small commission from everything you buy. Now, I thought we'd do this, Jody, on the show this morning. We're going to try to stump the Amazon link. Remember on the old Tonight Show, Johnny Carson used to do Stump the Man, where, you know, they used to shout out the names of songs and they would try to see if Doc Severinsen and the orchestra could actually play those songs. Right. What I thought we'd do is we play Stump Amazon, the Amazon link. Now, you name a product, Jody. Just name a random product. It doesn't even have to be specific, like with a brand name or anything like that. And we'll see if Amazon.com actually has that product.
Let me see. Clown nose.
Clown noses. Okay, we're going to go to the Amazon link through bobseska.com. It's just beneath the logo. Go to bobseska.com.
Right.
And as we'll go, we'll check, we'll do a search at amazon.com now, because now we're at the front page of amazon.com. Clown noses. And then, of course, right here, of course, as predicted, 12-pack of novelty red foam clown noses. Squishy Red Foam by Pudgy Pedro.
Pudgy Pedro, he's my favorite.
At the low price through Amazon Prime of
$8.99. Can it be delivered tomorrow?
You can get it tomorrow, August 2nd, if you order through Amazon Prime. You can also get ST Park Novelty Blue Foam Clown Noses, Circus Party Halloween Costume, pack of 12.
Obviously, 12.
Right, because they get dirty so easily.
I guess.
You don't want to have to launder your clown noses, do you? You want to have a bunch of backup clown noses. The blue clown noses, not as in demand. They are a dollar cheaper at $7.99.
Well, you know, the red ones, they do take precedence.
Yes. Here's an interesting variation of that. A 24-pack. You really need some extra clown noses. Twone Foam Clown Nose Value Pack with 24 noses for circus parties, Halloween, Red Nose Day, cosplay, and more. only
it's cosplay.
Cosplay. If you're cosplaying as a clown and you want to be the most hated person at the convention that you're attending,
you want people to run away from you screaming.
This, you can actually get 24 clown noses for just $7.58. That's a bargain.
That is a bargain.
So you want it when you go to Amazon.com through our Amazon link, you want to make sure to shop around for the lowest possible prices. And you can actually do that by clicking a drop-down menu and sort everything from lowest prices to highest prices. And then you would find out where all the cheapest clown noses are. How about them apples?
How about them apples?
That is the BobSeska.com Amazon link. Amazon.com has it all, and so can you when you go shopping until you're dropping while also supporting this show. All you have to do is go to BobSeska.com instead of Amazon.com. Once you've arrived at the podcast page, just click the all caps Amazon link just beneath the logo on the main page. It takes you directly to the front page of Amazon.com. You go shopping as normal, but if you use our link, we get a small commission from everything you buy. It costs you nothing extra, and it helps support the show. And if you own a small business, make sure to source your supplies through Amazon.com. Toner cartridges, backup batteries, paper clips, printer paper, etc. Things that Anthony Scaramucci walked out of the White House with.
Under guard.
Yeah, right. Use our link when you restock your supplies, and don't forget to bookmark it. That's the BobSeska.com Amazon link. It's the only way to shop.
The Bob Seska Show.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Yes, Night Ranger, so we can say goodbye to Tony the Smooch. I love doing this. We played this when Sean Spicer was fired. I guess we'll double this for both Scaramucci and Reince Priebus. They're both gone. Yeah. We can all shed a small tear.
Wasn't there a song that American Idol did when people were asked to leave?
Oh, that's is a song. I should get that. Although, I love just how sappy this Night Ranger song is.
It's very sappy. Yeah, I think the one was like a Daughtry song or something.
This just makes people cry.
That's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, the one from, Lonnie just sang it, the one from Idol was I'm Going Home.
All right, that's a really good one. We'll have to get that one. We'll have to get
for
that
Betsy
one
DeVos up. When she gets fired.
Yeah, that's right, Betsy DeVos. When John Kelly gets fired in
when
2 weeks.
When John Kelly gets fired in 2 weeks, exactly.
John Kelly's going to run out of that place with his, you know, what's left of his hair on fire. Oh, God, get me out of here! It's going to be like that Sam Kinison bit where he's talking about his wife and he gets out of the, gets out of the car at a red light. Oh, God! Starts running.
When does OJ get out?
Isn't OJ already out?
No, I think he actually physically gets out in October. So by then, he'll probably have OJ come in.
That's right. OJ, it'll be down
Robert
to...
Blake.
Yeah, exactly right. It'll be OJ or it'll be Meatloaf. Meatloaf will become chief of staff.
Absolutely.
Right, Meatloaf?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Gary, I mean, there's a whole slew. We already have Omarosa.
God, you know, I was thinking that playing that Meatloaf clip. I was just thinking about this yesterday. I don't know how this popped into my head, but it was like 4 years ago, I think, that Chez and I were talking about Donald Trump potentially running for president. This is a long, long time ago before we, you know, it was, I think before the 2012 election. And he was like planning to run and he was still doing Celebrity Apprentice. And there was a scene in Celebrity Apprentice where Donald Trump literally asked Meatloaf whether he should run for president. He's saying, people are saying I should run for president. Meatloaf, should I run for president?
Absolutely.
And that's what Meatloaf said. Meatloaf with a big, big shit-eating grin. Absolutely.
Maybe if he asks Meatloaf, that's the only thing he won't do.
That's right.
We'll find out what he won't do is if Trump asks him to be the chief of staff and he won't do that.
But I won't do that.
Maybe that's the thing he won't do.
That's right. So this is the other bombshell news story. And I swear to God, I don't know about you, Jody. In the process of covering all this stuff, it's becoming more and more difficult to keep up. It's becoming more and more difficult to distinguish the scandals one from the other. They're bleeding into, they're all happening at the same time. And they're on similar trajectories. And it's almost becoming a full-time job just to keep track of what's going on with Trump.
I know you're getting this because of the podcasting, and you do it a couple times a week, and it's like, okay, right as you get there, we're going to talk about everything, and then we're going to finish, and it'll all be old news.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it was like, I forget what day it was. Maybe it was last week. Maybe it was Tuesday's show. I forget exactly what show it was. Those seem to run together, too. But I was delaying the show because we wanted to make sure we included all the things that were happening that day. Because right. as the trend has been going, we wrap up the show, and then seconds later, this major news story drops, and then everything that we just covered on the show mm-hmm. is completely irrelevant because people have moved on to talking about this other topic. And of course, just as we finished the show, I believe it was Tuesday or Thursday last week, that's when that New Yorker story came out about right. Scaramucci claiming that Steve Bannon can suck his own c**k.
Hey, that's very talented of Bannon, considering, I mean, his shape and everything. That can't. It's either it's really, really big or he's the best contortionist ever.
Well, you know, as we discussed on the after party on Friday with Kimberly Johnson, we talking about how it was very clear from what Scaramucci was saying that Steve Bannon can't actually do it, but that he's trying to do it. He's giving it a shot, which he's means
God bless him.
Which means he's got to get some chiropractic adjustments yes. somewhere along the line. Make sure he's limber enough. And then, of course, there's a distance thing involved. There's a length problem that yeah. I think he's going to run into, because you can only bend your spine and your neck so far that
maybe
you need
he's double jointed.
You need to have the extra. Somebody's need to complete that angle. You know, you got to get. You can get only so far before your neck is not going to bend anymore. And then I'm going into too much detail on this already.
Yes,
so
you are.
Yeah,
I think
stop.
You've tried this, Bob.
I've already. You know what? When the story broke, I said, you know what? I've got to try an experiment here. I've got to see if it can be done. And I determined that no. No, it can't be done. Sadly.
Sad.
Sadly.
Well, and you know what's sad is last week everybody didn't pay attention to the Browder testimony.
Yeah, that's right. Browder, whose lawyer was Magnitsky.
Yes.
Yes.
Hence the sanctions.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and you know, of course, the White House doesn't know how to pronounce that. So,
Magnitsky.
Yeah, exactly. The Browder testimony was eye-opening, to yeah. be sure. I mean, this gives us a really good glimpse into Putin's Russia and, mm-hmm. and Putin himself and the way Putin behaves and the way enemies of Putin are treated. And that was, of course, Magnitsky's entire fight, was to expose all of this corruption. And, of course, he ended up becoming, a victim of all of that. Mm-hmm. Terrible, terrible treatment in prison. Died as a result of his treatment in prison. And that gave us the Magnitsky Act, which was a series of sanctions applied on two separate occasions, one more narrowly targeted, and then another one during the transition around December right. of last year, mm-hmm. that targeted more Russians in the with these sanctions. So and then, of course, Donald Trump wants to roll all of that back because, of course, PP tape. So meanwhile,
I can't wait to see the pee-pee tape.
Yeah. So we have this new story that dropped today through NPR. NPR was the source of this just unbelievably dramatic new revelations about the lengths to which Donald Trump and the Trump White House and their co-conspirators at Fox News Channel will go to sidetrack the public and sidetrack the media from the Trump-Russia story. This is all part of the cover-up. I'm just going to read this story verbatim, and because this really, really demands first-hand interpretation rather than me just kind of screwing it all up. The headline goes, "Behind Fox News' baseless Seth Rich story, the untold tale." You remember, Seth Rich was a Democratic National Committee staffer who was shot in the streets during a botched mugging.
Right.
And then suddenly became the centerpiece of a conspiracy theory orchestrated by Fox News Channel in conjunction with the Trump White House.
Until very recently, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Hannity was harping on it as early as, you know, a couple weeks ago still.
Right. Yeah. And the remarkable thing about that is Fox News already retracted the story.
Right.
So Fox News said the story was BS, and yet Hannity continues to market it. Of course, InfoWars continues to market this story, and you'll find it all over the place online. But here's the story from NPR. Fox News Channel and a wealthy supporter of President Trump worked in concert under the watchful eye of the White House to concoct a story about the death of a young Democratic National Committee aide, according to a lawsuit filed on Tuesday. The explosive claim is part of a lawsuit filed against Fox News by Rod Wheeler. What we needed another Rod in this story between Rod Rosenstein and Rob Goldstone, and a lot of Rods and Robs. So this one, Rod Wheeler, is a longtime paid commentator for the news network, for Fox News. The suit was obtained exclusively by NPR. Wheeler alleges Fox News and the Trump supporter intended to deflect public attention from growing concern about the administration's ties to the Russian government. His suit charges that a Fox News reporter created quotations out of thin air and attributed them to him to propel her story. Fox News president of news, Jay Wallace, told NPR on Monday that there was, quote, no concrete evidence that Wheeler was misquoted by the reporter Malia Zimmerman. The news executive did not address a question about the story's alleged partisan origins. Fox News declined to allow Zimmerman to comment for this story. The alleged partisan origins are, of course, the White House, the White House itself, right?
Right.
The story, which first aired in May, was retracted by Fox News a week later. Fox News has today taken no action in response to what it said was a failure to adhere to the network standards. The lawsuit focuses particular attention on the role of the Trump supporter, Ed Butowski. All right, let's. I wish that had been clarified earlier in the story.
Yeah, no kidding. They buried the lead.
Yeah, I'm not writing for NPR. But anyway, so the Trump supporter we were talking about before is Ed Butowski. He is a wealthy Dallas investor, an unpaid Fox commentator on financial matters, who has emerged as a reliable Republican surrogate in recent years. Butowski offered to pay for Wheeler to investigate the death of the DNC aide Seth Rich on behalf of his grieving parents in Omaha, Nebraska. On April 20th, a month before the story ran, Butowski and Wheeler, again, the Trump supporter Butowski and Wheeler, the investigator, met at the White House with then press secretary Sean Spicer.
And Spicer is corroborating that.
To brief him on what they were uncovering. The first page of the lawsuit quotes a voicemail and text from Butowski boasting that Trump himself had reviewed drafts of the Fox News story just before it went to air and was published. Again, this is a conspiracy to defraud the public. And I mean, it also is besmirching this kid and his family. Mm-hmm. Un-effing believable. Trump possibly directly involved with all of this. Spicer now tells NPR that he took the meeting as a favor to Butowski, a reliable Republican voice. Spicer says he was unaware of any contact involving the president. He didn't say there wasn't any contact. He said he was just unaware of it. And Butowski tells NPR that he was kidding about Trump's involvement. Yeah, everyone's joking, right? Kevin McCarthy was joking when he said Putin pays Trump and Dana Rohrabacher. All these actual, you know, the funny thing about jokes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jody, you're quite familiar with comedy.
They're so much funnier when you have to explain them.
Yes, exactly. That's the first thing. The second thing is jokes always have a bit of truth in them,
yes.
Don't they? I mean, why jokes are jokes. There's always a hint of truth to every good joke. And and somehow everything that they say that it turns out to be untrue. We've also been hearing, by the way, speaking of bad jokes, that Trump's remarks at that that he gave to those police officers in New York last week.
Yeah, that was a joke.
He was just joking.
Yeah.
He was just joking about excessive use of force by police officers. He was just
snowflakes.
Yeah. Trump is so hysterical, isn't he? Talking about abusing suspected criminals.
I can't wait till he headlines the Comedy Store.
Yeah, I know. And then he could start his entire set by saying, "Hey, you know that thing where you put your hand on their head? You put the hand.
The way you put the hand.
And using paddy wagon, which is a slur.
They get the paddy wagon. And he was getting the really, like, a really obnoxious New York Trump.
The way you put the hand over.
You know, like, sometimes, like, when Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton would go to the South, their accent would become thicker.
Right.
Trump goes to New York, and suddenly he's like, "Hey, we got to take the hand and put the hand in the head. Put the hand in the head when before they get into the car.
The way you put the hand over.
Get the hand in the head when they get in the car." And it's just like, oh, Jesus God.
Well, and what bothered me was the laughter in the crowd. But if you watch the video, most of the people behind him were not amused.
No, absolutely not. But enough applauded to make me think,
okay, they need to go. Those that applauded, you're fired now.
Yeah. I think, you know what, there needs to be, I think, remember during the Obama administration, there were those beer summits that took place? Uh-huh. I think some of those cops need to have a beer summit with the NAACP or, you know, Black Lives Matter or something like that. Yeah. And talk it out, because that totally not funny. If you're an African-American in this country, there is nothing, absolutely nothing. If you're just a free thinking American, a rational American, there is nothing funny about that joke.
Absolutely nothing. It wasn't funny. It was quite frightening, and like, wow, you're really giving these guys permission to kill another Freddie Gray.
Exactly. I mean, unarmed men and women, and now we're hearing about women too, and a white woman we heard just this past week.
Yeah, in Minnesota. Yeah,
are being shot, but it's obviously mostly black men. Mm-hmm. Who are being shot in the back when they're unarmed and running away, and murdered in cold blood. Not isolated incidents in all of this. This is a systemic issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's my theory that they're being trained to do this. They're being trained to use deadly force at the drop of a hat. The second they feel threatened, they're being trained, empty your weapon.
Yeah, just, and that's not right. I mean, I have friends that are police officers, and when they were trained, because it was a long time ago, no, you hope to never draw your weapon.
Right, right. And
the idea is you don't draw it in a 30-year career. You have never drawn your weapon. That's the old way. Nowadays, it's like every other week somebody's drawing their weapon.
Exactly. And then you have a lot of really poorly trained cops as well who are overreacting. There was the one that just recently we saw the video of. It was a routine traffic stop. And the guy ended up unloading his whip, shooting another man in a car with his girlfriend or wife and then the child sitting in the back seat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shot him dead right there. Oh, yeah. And it's all on video. I mean, they're even on dash cam video and they're still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so hilarious joke. Donald Trump, funny, yuckmeister.
The way you put the hand.
Unbelievable.
I'm sad now.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're going to take one last break and wrap up the show right after these words.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius Bath and Body Products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Okay, welcome back to our Tuesday show. Jody Hamilton is here. Jody.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Bob.
I don't know why. Hello, I said Bob. It that way. It's like, Jody. There's Jody. Jody's right there. I was just going to ask you to plug
this. Are you naked too, Bob? Because I always am.
It's Pantless Tuesday, so I'm not wearing pants today.
Good. Just the shirt?
Just that. I'm, well... I didn't say it was shirtless Tuesday, so
I'm wearing the ties in the front, like the old Sonny Bono kind of thing?
Not wearing pants, and I'm wearing a half shirt.
I like it.
Yeah.
Is it a fishnet crop top? That's all I need
exactly.
to know.
Exactly. It's exactly what I'm. How did you know? Is there a video camera in here? Am I being
there
spied
is.
On?
You didn't cover your camera, did you?
No, I sadly didn't. I want Russian spies to hack my computer and see what I'm doing in my office.
Well, then you can get some nice candid shots.
Exactly. You know, I wanted to ask you, where can people find your podcast and things like social media?
And things like that, and of these nature. From -the-bunker.com. We're also on the TuneIn app. We are on Netroots Radio. We are on Indie Media Weekly. We're big whores.
Yes.
We're slutty because we're not getting paid. So we're more slutty than we are whores.
Right.
You can find us at Facebook, From the Bunker, and at From the Bunker JR is our Twitter handle.
All right. When's the next show?
Tomorrow.
Oh, perfect. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that. That'll be
so
much fun.
We will have a full bunker. We have a friend coming in from South Carolina who's running for the mayor of his city.
Oh, that's very cool. You know, it was funny. I actually know there's a statistic that's out recently showing that there's a record number of Democrats running mm-hmm. to challenge Republicans on House seats for 2018. I actually personally know two people, and this has never happened before. This is maybe just coincidental. I don't know. But I know now two people who are running for Congress.
I just met one on Saturday.
And I'm not talking about like Facebook friends or e-friends, people I know on Twitter or where else. People I personally know, people I've personally met are actually running for Congress as Democrats.
Yeah, I met a guy who's running for Dana Rohrabacher's seat.
Oh, you know that one too?
I just met him on Saturday night. I met his campaign manager, and we were chatting, and she's like, oh, he's running for Dana Rohrabacher's seat. I'm like, you got my vote if I move down to OC.
Yeah, watch out for the Russians. Watch out for the Russians on that one. I swear to God, Dana Rohrabacher is up to his ass in compromat.
Yeah.
Dana Rohrabacher is absolutely compromised by the Russians. He is he is working for the Kremlin. There is mm-hmm. no doubt about that. So, you know, running in that race is going to be... Russia.
Well, the guy's got a lot of money behind him, so that's going to help.
It's going to be a lot of malware, a lot of fake mm-hmm. news stories, social media targeting, hacking. He's going to be hacked. You know, I hope his internet security is tight because he's going to get hacked.
Well, he's got a lot of money behind him. He's also very wealthy himself. He's only 33 years old.
Can you say his name?
Hold, please. Your call is important.
Okay. So you're going to go look it up?
His name is Michael Kotick, Kotick.
All right. And he's running...
For the 48th. California's 48th, which is Dana's seat.
All right. So, you know, and Dana Rohrabacher, it's about time he's got to go.
He really has to go.
Especially knowing how compromised he is by the Russians.
Exactly. I mean, this is a very, very red district, so it'll be tough to win as a Democrat. But like you said, I believe it was on your show with Buzz. See, I do listen to you. You said 202 Democrats are running this?
209 so far.
209. Wow.
And we're still way far out. Usually about this point in time, about 40 or 50 Democrats will have already declared. In previous election, or the year before the midterm takes place, at this point in time in the calendar, maybe 40, maybe even fewer than that, 28 in some elections. And you can also correlate the balance between the number of Democrats versus the number of Republicans mm-hmm. to determine who or which party may win back or protect their majorities in Congress. Yeah. And it looks like the Democrats, at least statistically, at least by this measure, looks like it's going to be a big year for the Democrats. But please, for God's sake,
Don't get happy.
Heaven's sake, do not think that 2018 is in the bag.
No.
But that being said, it is so crucial that the Democrats win back at least one chamber, and it's most likely going to be the House.
We have a shot at the House. We need 25 seats or something, 24, 25
Yeah,
seats.
It's about 25. The magic number is 218. As long as whoever gets to 218 is going to hold the majority in that.
And then we can impeach him, and then we have President Pelosi. What?
That's exactly right. Perfect. I like the sound of that. All right. And one of the main things to protect, obviously, is healthcare because, mm-hmm. And I'm just going to have to do so much bleeping on today's show, but the Republicans keep f***ing that chicken. And they're going back to the well. They're going to do something called the Graham-Cassidy replacement plan. This will be a disaster. It's just as bad as the BCRA, maybe worse, because it not only it defunds or it takes funding away from Medicaid, it also rolls back the Medicaid expansion, and it eliminates the subsidy payments for lower income Americans to help them buy insurance.
Oh yeah, they're going to get Murkowski, Collins, and McCain back on that.
Yeah, there's no way in hell. There's no way now. This isn't moving forward at all. This is a complete non-starter.
F you.
Vox.com is reporting here that Cassidy Graham would arguably be more disruptive, not less, to the current healthcare system. It would let money currently spent on health insurance to go toward other programs, providing no guarantee that the Affordable Care Act programs individually rely on today would continue into the future. They would convert some, but not all of that spending into a lump sum payment to the state. So they're talking about block grants here.
Ugh, that's the stupidest idea in the world. The
states could choose to spend this money on providing insurance, or they could use it to fund high risk pools.
Just or prisons.
Bad. Bad. Just awful. We know these things don't work. High risk pools don't work.
Nope.
Not as a permanent solution. Certainly, health savings accounts don't work. Block grants are going to be a mess because, as you said, they're going to use that money for all sorts of things.
Yes, it's a block grant. They can use it for anything.
Anything they want. That's right. Meanwhile, Trump is directly threatening members of Congress.
Yeah.
Which indicates to me that he just doesn't care anymore about keeping the Republican Party on his side. And which also means that it's entirely likely that, you know, my predictions about the Republicans not engaging in an impeachment process against Donald Trump, that's actually becoming more and more likely, that the Republicans will actually go after him.
I think you're right. I think that threatening them the way he is, threatening Lisa Murkowski and it's being investigated, doing these things, it's just, this isn't how it works, dude. And these people are career politicians. And they're like, no, this is not the way this works. Even Jeff Flake is saying the same thing now. So it's like, stop voting that way, Jeff, but still.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it went from 1% chance of the Republicans actually participating in an impeachment proceeding to maybe now we're at, and again, this is not super huge, but it's more than it was before. I would say we're at about 10 to 15% chance.
I would go with you on that, on those odds.
I'm just spitballing that, but now especially, given that Donald Trump is threatening to go after the salaries of congressional employees, and I'll tell you how that all works out. Donald Trump's
how could he legally do that? I mean,
first of all, he can. He can absolutely do this. He can order the Office of Personnel Management to say, we're no longer allowing the federal government to pay part of your Congress's premiums for their health insurance. Now, the way this all works is the Affordable Care Act has an amendment that was proposed by Chuck Grassley that said members of Congress, if they want employer-based health coverage, that's the same as if someone works at Walmart full-time, they get a health insurance plan as a benefit included in their salary, and then Walmart or whoever the employer is pays part of the monthly premiums for that health insurance policy.
Part or all of them. It all depends on the company, but some people get 100% paid, others it's a 50-50 share, et cetera.
Exactly. And since 1960, government workers, including members of Congress and members of Congress staff, have been receiving health insurance through this federal employee health benefits program. And when Obamacare got passed and this Chuck Grassley amendment forcing Congress to go on Obamacare exchanges began to take effect in around 2013 or so, they were suddenly like, oh, crap, this amendment doesn't have anything in it about helping us to pay our premiums, which is a benefit that we had up until the Affordable Care Act passed. So if members of Congress and their staff want employer-based health insurance coverage, they have to buy insurance through either the DC exchange or through their home state's Obamacare exchange. And if they do that, then they continue receiving that salary benefit where the government pays part of their monthly premiums. And the way that happened is, and the way that premium sharing continued after Obamacare passed was that John Boehner and Harry Reid went to Obama and said, we need you to continue this benefit because it's going to amount to a massive salary cut for especially our staffers and some of the lower paid members of the House. And so we can't tolerate that. Please, can you reinstate the premium sharing? And so Obama relented and said, sure, I'm going to order the OPM to do that, the Office of Personnel Management. So that went into effect in 2013. No good deed goes unpunished. The Republicans turn around and say, oh, so Congress is exempt from Obamacare.
Right.
That was the framing. They made it seem like because the premium sharing is happening, that Congress is exempt from Obamacare, when in fact, Congress, if they want employer-based coverage, is required to get their insurance through Obamacare. It's exactly the opposite of what they're saying.
Right.
So Donald Trump is now threatening to take away that premium sharing salary benefit, which he can do. I mean, remember, as the story goes, Obama ordered OPM to do this. Trump can order OPM to stop doing this.
Wow.
Again, we're talking about, and I haven't looked up the numbers. I don't know what exactly it costs, generally speaking, in monthly premiums to sign up for a gold plan on the DC exchange. Mm-hmm. It's not cheap. Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about an individual plan, maybe it's a member of Congress who's single, no dependents, anything like that.
Under the age of 65.
Under the age of 65. Probably just estimating based on what the rates are in Maryland that I do know of. The rates in D.C. are probably in the range of $400 to $500 a month, with 72% of that monthly premium getting covered by the government. And then you eliminate that, and suddenly it's like a pay cut of $300, $400 a month.
Yeah, it's $3,600 a year, potentially, or more.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a lot of money, especially if you're a low-paid staffer. I mean, they're
a staffer, it's a lot. It's if you're a congressperson, not so much. But if you're a staffer, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, well, there's still members of Congress, members of the House, who are either freshman members or recently elected members. Who they're young, they're from small districts, they don't have a lot of money. There are some of them who just sleep on a cot in their office.
Right.
They can't afford to live. And I know it's not one of these sad, tragic stories where, oh, those poor members of Congress are so poor and destitute. They're huddling over oil drums with fires blazing and they're singing doo-wop songs. And it's not that. It's the idea that Donald Trump is now threatening the salaries of members of Congress and their staffers. And it's just, it is so counterproductive. Donald Trump is acting as if members of Congress work for him.
Well, doesn't everybody, Bob?
That's right. He's the boss of the country, isn't he?
Yeah. And he's the boss of us.
That's right. But he thinks they work for him. So therefore, he can do that with impunity. Mm-hmm. Like, there won't be any retaliation for doing this. The other thing he's going to do, and this really is something that's going to hurt a lot of people, which is he's actually going to, or he's at least threatening to, and this is the other side of this tweet from the other day. He's threatening to take away the bailouts, what he calls the bailouts for insurance companies.
They're not bailouts.
They're totally not bailouts. This is something that was carved into the Affordable Care Act to help people pay their deductibles and co-pays. Now, these payments go to insurance companies, but the insurance companies use that money to help people pay their out-of-pocket expenses.
Exactly.
Through their insurance policies. Now, Trump is threatening to take that away, which would screw thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
Well, yeah, I mean, before the Affordable Care Act passed, when I was making my gross salary was $45,000 a year, I was paying $6,000 a year in premiums.
Oh, my God.
And this is when I was in my, late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah.
And with a really bad policy, mind you, it was catastrophic.
Yeah.
I was still paying $500 a month.
Right.
I'm paying $500 now a month, but I have a silver plan and things get covered.
Yeah, exactly. And the principle is, though, that if you are required by the government to buy insurance, if you don't make enough money to actually take on that burden, then it's the government's responsibility because of that requirement to help you pay for the insurance. You just can't say someone earning $21,000 a year, suddenly you have to buy a policy that's going to cost you $13,000 a year because you've got a family of five.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. You can't. Right. It's completely unfair to actually require people to do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's why if you're going to have the mandate, you've got to have the Medicaid expansion, and then you've got to have that hole fixed between Medicaid recipients and those that make a certain amount of money in order for people to be able to buy this product that they're being told they have to buy.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Or we can just go single payer and
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, that's the good news, that I think out of this, we're going to get a little closer to Medicare for all. My prediction, at least this week, which can change next week, my prediction is that what we'll start to see is, as on the Medicare for all front, we'll start to see a rollback of the eligibility age. So maybe the right now it's at 65. Maybe they roll it back to 55. And say, okay,
cool, I'm 5 years away.
Yeah, exactly. So, or, you know, they roll it back to 40, or which would make me eligible suddenly for Medicare. And so the Medicare eligibility age rolls back eventually to the point where everyone is covered under Medicare.
Well, I mean, we could be like England with both a public and private kind of thing.
I mean,
England has your national health, but if you want boutique health care, then you buy that separate from what you're given just by being born there and living there.
Well, yeah. And in fact, Australia has a system where it's literally called Medicare for all.
Right.
And what they do is they give you the option. You can either get the government-run Medicare for all system. You can either sign up through that system, or you can buy your own private insurance, or you can buy a combination of the both. You can get Medicare for all, plus you can get a Medicare for all supplement program, like basically what Medicare recipients get now.
Right.
They get Medicare, plus they get the Medicare
Part
Advantage.
Exactly.
Plus the Part D for prescriptions and so on.
Right.
And of course, it's cheaper to do it that way because the overhead for Medicare is much lower. The overhead for Medicare in the existing system in the United States is only 3%.
Yep, versus 20% for private insurance.
Exactly right. So it's a lot more affordable. It's less of a burden on the healthcare system. Reduces
and they pay
costs.
Faster.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to cost more in the near term in terms of government spending, as a trust fund gets built up from everybody, and of course there are going to be have to be tax increases as well. But once it gets rolling, I believe the overall effect of it will balance out the cost to the government. So,
and it would balance out for everybody paying into it, because right now I'm paying $6,000 a year for my medical insurance. I'm not going to be paying an extra $6,000 a year in taxes for a Medicare for all plan. I'm just not.
Exactly. So that is the show today. We have the postmortem show coming up next. Everything we didn't get to, and there's actually kind of another bombshell news item today.
Already?
That I don't know if anyone's talking about this, but it has to do with Trump and Russia.
What?
And Air Force One.
Oh, God.
We're going to talk about that on the postmortem show. Sign up at patreon.com. Or actually, here's what you do. There's a better way to do that. Go to bobsesca.com, just beneath the logo, right near the Amazon link, in fact. There's an all capital.
Where you can get clown noses.
Clown noses. You can get a 28-pack of clown noses through the Amazon link. It's a bargain at twice the price, only $7.58. How about that? And you can also get blue clown noses. Who knew they came in blue?
Who knew?
Who knew? What was I saying?
Sign up for the show.
Oh, yes. Thank you, my addled brain. Too much information. Too many Russian names. Sign up for the show at patreon.com/Bob and Chez. Or the easy way to do it is go to bobsesca.com and click the Patreon link right under the logo in all capital letters right near the Amazon link. So you can do two things at once. The Amazon link and you can go to our Patreon page to support the show. $5 a month gets you 2 postmortem shows a week. $10 a month gets you 2 postmortem shows and the after party. And the postmortem show coming up next.
The way you put the hand over.
Okay, I wasn't done, but we ran out of music anyway. Oh, well. It happens. You run out of music some days.